And this time I'm going to remember. Thank you for joining me, everyone. Welcome to the program. We are live today. Michael D. Shaw is here. Mike joins me usually Friday at 3 p.m. to discuss politics and its intersection often with science and culture. Mike, thanks for joining me as always.
Always a pleasure.
Okay, now before we go into the topic at hand here, which is the Gay Pride Month, I want to give out the Skype number. And I'm having some technical issues today. Skype is not letting me do it. Okay, so I'm not going to give out the Skype number. Why don't we just go with the show?
That's a lot.
Yeah, whatever. So just thank goodness I'm on the air and I can do this thing. You know, there was the late Andrew Breitbart who said that politics is downstream from culture. And what he meant by that is to study the culture is to see and to be able to predict with a good deal of accuracy what is going to be going on in politics. And there's no better example of that than all of the events in the constellation of what we now call Gay Pride Month, which is in a way a lot of what was predicted back in the day when gay marriage was legalized. Now, we might recall that this all transpired in Massachusetts, my home state, in 2003, in a decision that was written by Superior Court Chief Justice Margaret Marshall of the Massachusetts Court, and that had reverberations around the world. It was, I guess they figured that they had it kind of set in Massachusetts as the state that would be the test case. And it launched a worldwide event. And Massachusetts got to get into history. We have done a lot of things the first time here, and a lot of them are very good things.
I think we're the first state to abolish slavery.
It was in the world, legally. Yeah. It was also the first state to have a land bank as opposed to like a central bank. It's a big subject. We'll go into it another time. Yeah. But the point is that at the time, there was talk about legalizing civil unions, which actually was, frankly, a reasonable position to take. People that are living together as if they were married, they've committed to each other. You know, they said, well, you should have certain rights that a married couple has. I think that that's a reasonable thing, but that wasn't good enough. They had to literally call it marriage. And I think that that's something where we entered a slippery slope because obviously, it's not a marriage. Two men or two women cannot be married. Science shows that. And once you started down the slippery slope of having something that is untrue be codified as law, which is something that I think is unprecedented, then now we have a situation where you can declare a woman a man and a man a woman. And, you know, you can declare that there's no such thing as the difference between the sexes, what they call non-binary. And these things are untrue. You know, there's no such thing as non-binary. There's a man and a woman. But when you put these things into law, then you have a situation where untruths become truths under the law. They don't become truths actually, because they're not natural law. And that's, to me, analogous. And I know I harp on this, so be it. If you don't like it, tough. It's similar to the crackpot Nazi race theories. They were untrue. There's no difference between human beings based on race. But once they put that into laws, and they did, starting in the 1930s, and once it's a law, you can punish people for opposing it, for dissenting from it, then you're entering into kind of a reverie of falsehood. You know, that something is recognized as truth when it's not. And so I think that that's where we are now. And that is one of the things that people who opposed the idea of gay marriage warned about, and they were right. Now we have situations where the Democratic Party views as their great cause the idea of neutering children. And the only argument is whether or not it should be done with the parents' permission or behind their back. I mean, obviously it shouldn't be done at all, but, and the other cause they have is children having drag queen shows with drag queens come in and read nursery rhymes to children, which had previously been voluntary adult entertainment. Now it has to be for children. And if you're opposed to that, you're somehow, you know, a caveman. I mean, you're evil, you know, you're not progressive. This is the new idea of progressiveness. And that's being reflected in, Mike, are you there? The, you know, the whole zeitgeist of the Gay Pride Month. What's going on? We seem to have lost Mike. Yeah, I'm going to see, I mean, am I being shut out? That could be. We'll find out shortly. Let's see. Let me call him.
Yeah, I had a message back online.
Okay.
We offended the PC gods here.
I think that, you know, I think that's exactly what's going on here, Mike. Can you get back in? I have your sound.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, we're having a little.
Be a problem, my friend.
I'm having some technical issues today, like you wouldn't believe.
It was, I don't know if we're live now on the audio, but
we're just live on. You know, my audience can hear you on the phone, but I don't have yet.
I'm really sorry for
that. No, it's not your. It's, I don't think it's.
Was, monitoring our.
Yeah, I don't think it's your fault. I think that's exactly right. I think that's exactly what's going on.
Unfortunately, these things don't boot up instantly.
No. That's okay. We'll let this happen in real time. Let me just.
You were really hitting a good point here, and. In fact, I was going to.
Well, let me just say, and while we're
here, we go StreamYard. Wow, it's just like some gremlin came in and shut it all down.
Well, that's the future, Mike. I mean, we're dealing with an international regime of censorship here. But while we're harumphing, I have gotten back my Skype, so. One thing, a door closes and a window opens. So now that Skype is back, let me give out the Skype number if anybody who is listening would like to call in. 617-396-4958. That number again, 617-396-4958. Ours is the only online program, I think, that can actually take a live phone call right off the street, you know. So, and so here we go. You're welcome to join us. Michael D. Shaw is here. We're talking about. Here we go, Mike.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. We're talking about Gay Pride Month, and I kind of was setting the table a little bit, as Jerry Williams used to say. And so here we are, and there's a whole month for this. It's an international phenomenon. It does emanate from calling civil unions, which again are perfectly legitimate, in my opinion.
Game well, hang on. I mean, let me comment on that. As an old friend, Belgian lady secretary, was fond of saying, "You're right and you're wrong." Okay. Had it stopped at civil unions, you're right. But I believe that the intention of a civil union was to force gay marriage eventually.
Oh, I agree with you totally. But at the time, it should have been exposed as such and said, look, the argument for gay marriage at the time, and if you look at Margaret Marshall's decision on that in Massachusetts, it was that a gay couple, a same-sex couple, who had a committed relationship and it was one that was real and long-term, they ought to have certain functional rights that a heterosexual couple has, such as, you know, inheritance and insurance and social security if one of the spouses dies, and parental rights if there are children involved, hospital rights if one of them has to go to the hospital, and other practical matters which are legitimate things to expect. I don't have any problem with that at all. And if they want to personally call it a marriage, I don't have a problem with that either. You know, maybe they want to have a commitment ceremony. I remember in the late 1970s, there was two guys got married on the steps of the cathedral. I mean, they were mocking the Catholic Church, and I think that's terrible. But look, they were private citizens. They wanted to have their ceremony. Who cares? Nobody really, you know, nobody had a problem with it. It wasn't really an issue. The issue is an issue because they codified the word marriage into law. And at the end of the day, it is not a marriage. A marriage can only happen between a man and a woman. That's just something that at the time everyone acknowledged, including President Barack Obama, including the Democratic Party, I may add. Actually, Obama wasn't president at the time. I think Bush was. But the point is that it was something that was understood because, you know, and I think that the meaning of words is very important here. A marriage is something that happens when two opposites come together and are merged to create a new thing. And, you know, you can't mix water and oil. That's not a marriage. But if you're baking a cake, you can mix ingredients together to create a cake. That's a marriage of ingredients. I'm pointing out that that's what a marriage is. And in that sense, and I don't want to get into anything too graphic here, but a man and a man or a woman and a woman cannot merge to make a marriage, all right? That can only happen one way and one way only, and that's between the sexual act between a man and a woman.
Well, let me make it a little more broad here. I mean, when you were talking before we got cut off about the Nazi racial theories, the key point that has to be brought out is that that was the science, that was the agreed to science in Germany, especially at the time. So once science or law is based on authority rather than logic and right reason, it's game over. Okay, because now if hair doctor so-and-so says something, that's science. And you see this play, I mean, it was tragic, obviously, how it played out in Nazi Germany, but by the same token, if hair doctor Fauci says something, right?
Yes.
And
example.
Again, if marriage now is subject to a, quote, definition, when it really didn't have to be defined before, and now we're going into this slippery slope of, well, hair doctor so-and-so says that this is a marriage, because you can make very good arguments. You're talking about procreation being the basis of a marriage. But if there are sterile individuals that are in love, that are married of the opposite sex, that's still a valid marriage.
That's right, because they're performing an act that can only be performed between the opposite, a man and a woman. Look at you know, when you get older and you have menopause, you're no longer fertile. You no longer can bear children, but you're still married and you still can perform that act. I mean, this isn't just biblical, which it is. I mean, the Bible, you know, the definition of marriage in the Bible is when a man and a woman come together, they're married. But it's also science. It's in the world of mammals. I mean, birds understand this. It's, you know, this is observable, scientific. You need the opposite gender, sex, not gender.
You're raising another good point, which I harp on all the time. Observation is supposed to be the basis of all science.
Right.
It isn't anymore. It isn't. Okay. Science now is, right. Classical science is you observe something. You suggest a hypothesis to explain it, and then you create experiments to prove your hypothesis. What science is now, for the most part, is you propose a hypothesis, which is usually politically correct, and you use data dredging in an attempt and statistics in an attempt to prove your hypothesis. It is science.
It's become completely political, and it's all about, you know, special interests, as they say, financing certain outcomes. Right, that was all about the COVID thing from beginning to end, which is why it was filled with lies. I would frankly even go further and say that that has a lot to do with global warming.
Of course,
right?
Of course.
They're looking for an outcome. And now every time there's a weather problem, Lester Holt is going to, you know, there's flooding in Texas, terrible flooding. It's unusual. There's this happening, there's that happening, and then there's global warming. They've got no proof of that. But they're going to say that because for whatever reason, reasons that we could speculate about, this is the powers that be, or as TJP says, the powers that ought not to be, are, you know, are just, you know, decided that this is the way of the future, to try to scare the crap out of the planet over global warming. And but I think that, you know, I suppose it's entered into all parts of our public life. And again, since we're talking about the Gay Pride Month, that's where the problem started. You know, that they had to declare this a marriage. It's like the Nazi regime declaring that different races had different functions or aspects because of the shape of their skull. They had the science called phrenology, where they literally would have these tweezers and they would measure someone's skulls. And they'd say, oh, this one is a Northern Baltic type. And this one is, you know, I mean, Indo-Basque or whatever. And that each race had a different quality according to this complete crackpot science, absolute falseness. And yet this was what was being taught in the schools because this was being sponsored by the Nazi state. And that's what we had. That's what we had with COVID. It was decided by the powers that be that legitimate, approved drugs that could have helped with early treatment and that could have probably saved tens of thousands of lives, like hydroxychloroquine. I've said it. I've been for saying that.
Well, you might as well say ivermectin.
And ivermectin and simple things like vitamin C and sunlight and vitamin D3 and zinc. These things can help retard the development of viruses. And yet they were to even suggest it, You would be banned. You would be censored.
Unfortunately, it's even more insidious than that. All right. There's absolutely no doubt that COVID was an engineered virus. All
right? Right.
And you said, well, wait a minute. Why was it an engineered virus? And I've said this before on your show. There's not a whole lot of virology to do, because it's basically like this virus exists. It causes this disease. So if you want to get grants, and you want to get money from the Defense Department, you have to figure out a way to weaponize a virus, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So this, and Fauci essentially admitted this, that we're doing gain-of-function.
Yes.
There's no point in doing gain-of-function research. It's a lie, because the big
They should never do it. And they're doing it even now at Boston University, by the way. And I'm not saying that because that's some conspiracy. This has been... You know, Boston Globe has reported on it. They even have shown where the site is, where they're conducting gain of function research, not too far from where I happen to live. Okay. It is absolutely horrifying. And
it's horrifying because the excuse that's given is that we have to do that. Well, there's two excuses. One is the rookies are doing it, so we have to do it. But the main excuse is that, well, we need to do this so we can come up with therapeutics, which is a damn lie. If that were the case, there should have been a therapeutic for COVID like that, and there never was.
Well, and also the money factor was that, you know, if you look at the patents that were taken out by both Pfizer and Moderna, and I've already heard some people in the alternative media read these things, like Dr. Judy Mikovits, for example, and some other people. I think that Scott Adams is doing a good job of this. He's a talk show host, and Stu Peters, another good guy. They are reading the patents, and they show that they knew that this did not, first of all, they knew in advance that this did not stop the spread of this virus. They knew that it wasn't even a vaccine for the virus. And furthermore, they knew that there were some very dangerous things in that vaccine. Now, and I know I could never talk about this on YouTube, but I had on the show Edward Dowd, who is the author of a book, a very scholarly book, he's a good researcher, where he drew data from actuarials and computational analysts from around the world, insurance people, who showed that starting about 18 months ago, there has been an unprecedented uptick in cancers, heart disease, and other ailments all around the world and in areas where they happen to be mandating the vaccine. Now, they're not coming out and saying that it's the vaccine. There's no proof of that. But you have to look at circumstantial evidence. What happened all of a sudden that created this historic uptick at where the standard deviation has moved 14 times?
Yeah.
I mean, and I think that probably a lot of my audience might have some firsthand experience with this. In my own family, I just found out another person has cancer, you know, right?
Well, let me point something out. And this is going to sound very cynical, but prove me wrong.
Right.
You could have now a situation whereby half the U.S. population dies off, and it would still not be blamed on the vaccine. And the reason they get away with this is that you could blame Pfizer and Moderna all you want, but the co-conspirators were the government. So who's going to rat out the government, right?
Right.
And it's the fact that, and I've said this a million times, people are getting sick of hearing this, the fact that Tony Fauci wasn't put in jail in the 1980s during the AIDS situation proves that this became, quote, state of the art. Because who's going to fight against Tony Fauci? Because he was controlling the grant money. It's absolutely insidious what happened to healthcare. And that's why I also say, and people are starting to agree with me, one of the worst laws ever passed in the U.S. was Medicare, because it put the feds in charge of healthcare. All right? And now
that's right. And it was all done under the guise of giving someone a health insurance annuity at the point of retirement, which could have been done without the government's involvement. I mean, that's a legitimate cause, just like Social Security gives someone an income annuity when they retire, which is also a legitimate thing to do. But it didn't have to be run by the government. It could have been maybe monitored by it, you know, in the same way that the government, the Federal Trade Commission monitors stock transactions, is because they're very complicated and very ripe for fraud. You know, I know I've given this example before, but Switzerland is a good example of a country that has universal health care, but the government stays completely out of it. You just have to have it, but you can order it on your own through competing companies. You order a level that is commensurate for what you want or what you can afford. And that, instead of having the government step in and run it and then siphon a big piece of the money off of themselves and manage it in a way that benefits them over you, and then starts to poke their nose into actual functions of healthcare. You know, they decide who gets what and why and how.
Well, so, at what point, though, should cynicism finally take over? I mean, you've said in a couple of different ways on this broadcast already that this particular thing started out with this intention. But I submit that in reality, it never seems to work out that way. Okay. And at some point, maybe we should just decide that the government should stop doing it. I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene, in a tweet in which she was attempting to defend the reason why she voted for this budget compromise, said, look, let's get this passed so we can do A, B, C, D, E, F, and G. And everybody knows none of that stuff will ever be done.
No.
So does she actually... Maybe, but it isn't going to be done because the system is totally corrupt beyond redemption. I don't know what the answer is, but to keep saying that we're going to fix this utterly broken situation, we've just got to abandon that point of view. You've got to try to do something else.
It's because we live in a tyranny, and because the U.S. Constitution has likely been suspended. You trace it back to George Washington. I don't know if I go that far, but I know what you mean. And you've made that case. I generally think it happened with FDR and the Emergency Declaration of 1933. But either way, we have, in a sense, I'll give one simple example. And that is that we really haven't had a free election, or very rarely, at least on the high levels, probably since Jefferson. I don't know. I mean, who knows how far back. And then once in a while, there's a mistake and somebody slips in, like a Trump. I would even suggest like a John F. Kennedy. They weren't supposed to win, right? But they did. And the whole rotten aristocratic edifice. I mean, C. Wright Mills talked about this in his sociological book, The Power Elite, that the, you know, I mean, we've talked about Glennon, right? His double government, Michael Glennon.
Your buddy.
Yes, my good friend, Michael Glennon. It basically shakes up this power elite, which is the tyrannical intersection of public and private entities. And that's what we have in this country. That's why you can do this thing like this managed plandemic, which Fauci, by the way, announced was coming right around the time Trump was elected. In fact, I think it was a reaction to it.
And well, there's a theory, it's you have the theology, that those on the side of Satan are forced to reveal themselves. And I think that's why he did it.
It's like Satan was screaming to come out, right?
Yeah, that there's a deal between God and Satan that, okay, do all this evil, but you have to show your hand at some point. And inevitably, their hand is shown.
Isn't that the story, the message of the book of Job, right? God let Satan do all these horrible things to Job, and then eventually he became aware of that.
I'm waiting for the restoration where God comes back and restores everything to what it was. In fact, Job ended up hitting twice as much as he had before.
Well, in the meantime, you have you have basic truth tellers. You and I do our best in this small venue, but there are people who will occasionally let the cat out of the bag.
Yeah.
And, they do keep things at least some level of equilibrium. I mean, I generally am an optimist. I think that ultimately the satanic establishment overplays its hand and people Indeed. Wake up and they see it.
And that's what's happening now with the pushback on Bud Light, Target, Kohl's, and all these other woke organizations.
Yeah, this brings us back, Michael, to Gay Pride Month. They are pushing child neutering. You know, in the case of Target, they are pushing satanic transsexual agenda for very young children, right? And I'm talking, when I say young children, I mean like 6 months old.
That's
baby
correct.
Clothes that have like the Baphomet on them, you know, with a that's both male and female and this sort of thing. I think that these are businesses. they must at some level think that they're going to do this because this is going to be the new way of being in this country. As we said, Breitbart said that the culture, you know, politics is downstream from culture. They probably felt that they are going to roll this thing out. There might be a couple of, you know, not right wing, you know, hotheads like you and I who might, you know, screech a little, but whatever, that'll blow over. And that this is the new way to be. And that is part of agenda. They've got the establishment oligarchy behind, on, you know, watching them and behind them, watching their back. and that they very confidently would roll this out. And this is being done by some of America's legacy corporations like Anheuser-Busch and Target and the Dodgers and other organizations that have a great history and that are revered. I think that even doesn't Ford come out with a car now that shows something like this? Anyway.
Yeah, well, what's going on? And as you know, most of my career I've been involved in small business where you're very close to, you know, worrying about making money, making a payroll, and so on and so forth.
Right.
But the big companies just sort of keep going on inertia, right? And you didn't need any marketing at Bud Light. They're going to keep selling this just because that's what people buy. So consequently, what happens, and a lot of people disagree with this, is you get into these big companies, the level of talent is very low because these are basically placeholders. So what are you going to do? Well, we got to do some, let's say, social justice or whatever. And the most cynical example, in some ways even worse than all this gay pride stuff, which people may not remember, when the whole affirmative action thing started, the most cynical company to get heavily involved with it was Xerox. And almost overnight, all their field salespeople became black women. Like 89% of the sales staff was black women.
Right.
Because they're checking off two boxes here. And you better not complain about your sales rep. And I distinctly remember, this is probably in the 90s, the black female sales rep called on us, and I had some pictures on my wall, which represented, I think the guy's name was Bert Schneider, who did the last photo session of Marilyn Monroe. And these were very tasteful, not even really new pictures of Marilyn Monroe. And she starts complaining to me directly about, how do you have this stuff in your office? And I'm thinking, wait a minute, you're trying to sell me something and you start attacking me because they were already in this privileged position, you know, being given a job that they probably didn't deserve in the first place.
Right.
And you could see it all happening. It was completely cynical by Xerox. And then this just went into overdrive. So naturally, some unqualified executive at Anheuser-Busch hires an unqualified woman to be the marketing director of only their biggest brand, for God's sake.
Mm.
All right. So what would you do if you and I had the task, how do we increase sales of Bud Light? I got a great idea. Let's appeal to 10 to the minus 5% of the audience. People that probably don't even buy beer.
They wouldn't buy Bud Light anyways. They're too busy with their shishi, you know, expensive, you know, stuff. I mean, they're not going to, you know, it's like, it's bizarre. Bud Light's audience is not going to be interested in a trans person, you know, it's just, it's a market. I'm talking here strictly from a marketing standpoint.
People forget it wasn't just that it was Dylan Mulvaney.
Yeah.
It was the remarks that he was making. I don't know, with this March Madness thing, you know, it was just putting down the very audience that would
watch
the NCAA basketball tournament. And it was just one insult after another, and how anyone could think that this would help the brand. It wasn't even so much that it was pro-transgender. It was just anti-beer drinker almost. But this gets released, and they thought it would go away, and it's not going away. And
no, Target, they're still losing. Every week they're losing more.
And I'll tell you what, it's worse than it was, because remember one factor that is purposely not being mentioned. And I don't know what percentage of their business is based on annual contracts from large organizations and service companies that have bought months in advance of Bud Light.
And now it's sitting there rotting on the shelf.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I hope that they go out. I hope that they're put out of business, because that's the only way to stop this kind of thing. I mean, I hope that they don't survive. I hope padlock the door, and that they're, you know, and it'll be like a lesson to companies that they really have to not insult their audience and not, you know, kind of get out of the business of social engineering and get back to pushing beer.
Well, I certainly hope that happens. I mean, what they're trying to do is turn it back around, right? Target knows it's in a lot of trouble. So now the argument is, well, Target has 50,000 employees, and what about them? Too bad, because you did it to them. We didn't do it. I mean, I hate these kind of excuses, and in a microcosm, I would encounter this when I was the co-commissioner of a Pop Warner football league many years ago.
Right.
The parents had to come up with X dollars to register the kid. Inevitably, there'd be a few kids, the payment wasn't made. So the argument from, and again, I'm sorry, inevitably, the single female mother, well, you're not going to deny Johnny the right to play football. It's just not me. You're denying Johnny the right to play football. You're not coming up with your $80 or whatever it was, right?
Right.
So now they're immediately trying to throw a guilt trip back on the people that are boycotting the brand.
It's worse than that. They're saying that they're causing violence and that people are being threatened. In a way, it's similar to, you know, the whole transgender thing anyways. They're saying, well, we're being subjected to violence, which, by the way, I'd like to see the statistics on that. I don't believe that. I don't think anybody's threatening them with violence. I don't think
they're redefining violence. They're redefining violence. Violence, because I saw one of the videos, was a guy removing a gay pride sticker from some display.
Right. And also it's misdirected in that there are, you know, for example, when parents started showing up at school board meetings
to
engage in their public dissent by criticizing this agenda, by basically taking the books that were in their libraries and in their classrooms, paid for by their taxpaying money, and simply reading the text, those parents, then you have situations following that where some teachers and some school board members are threatened, you know, right? There are calls of, you know, we're going to wipe you out. They are using that, whether or not that's real, and I think it probably is real, frankly, and it's wrong, and I think that it's a law enforcement question. But the problem is that they're blaming the parents. The parents are not to blame for that. It's what they're reading that is inciting people. They're not inciting anybody. They're not terrorists. The incitement is the fact that they're simply reading the text in some of these magazines. And by the way, it's homosexual sex that we're talking about here, because they're not going to put in a copy of Penthouse, right, and read and hold up pictures of straight sex, all right? And by the way, they shouldn't be doing any of it. But the point I'm making is that they're simply exposing these textbooks in the classrooms and in the libraries of very young children. They're not engaging in, you know, they're not responsible. It's the actual content itself that is responsible. And it's the school board's reaction to it that is causing the anger. Their reaction is completely hostile. Now, there's this organization, I forget what it's called. It's up in Bethel, Maine. It was started by a psychiatrist, I think Kurt Lewin, I believe his name was, back in the 1930s, which was there to help teachers and administrators diffuse opposition. And it was into a lot of this stuff way back when. And it is the organization that coined the word change agent.
Yeah.
And how to do change and how to, you know, when there's opposition, how you demonize the opposition and throw them off center. Well, these school board members have had that kind of training. At least some of them have. I should do some more. I'm going to have more on this next week. I'll do a little deeper research. I think Sam Blumenfeld brought this to my attention. The late Dr. Sam Blumenfeld, great researcher. Anyway, the way the school boards are behaving is just that. They're trying. they become like stones. I mean, they won't respond, and they're gaveling people out, and it's only adding to the anger. That's what's making people get angry. Now, I'm not condoning people calling in with death threats or in any way threatening violence. Again, that's a local police matter. Somebody calls in a death threat, you call the local police, they investigate that and find out who did it. You don't call Merrick Garland to send out the FBI to investigate.
Well, I mean, with all due respect, I don't believe that these death threats occurred anywhere near.
I don't either, actually. I know what you mean. I highly doubt it. I mean, probably they called them in themselves. It's like all these hoaxes around race and, you know, the Jesse Smollett business. You know, this is all, you know, people need to feel that they're being attacked. Recently, you had this Megan and Harry, you know, the royal, they had a hoax recently. I don't know if you heard about that.
Oh, yeah, with the so-called chase.
Chase through Manhattan, really? Yeah, for 3 hours? You know, look, I know enough about Manhattan. I've driven in Manhattan many times.
You could walk fast.
Yeah, I mean, you can't do a chase in Manhattan in the middle of the day or anytime. It doesn't happen. I mean, it was obviously a hoax. But they had this need to be seen as victims and put upon, and how horrible it is that paparazzi want to take their pictures, putting aside the fact that he got $10 million to write a book and he's out there doing interviews and she's starting a movie company. They don't want to have, you know, pictures done of them. Shut up and go out to the country and get on with your lives.
Yeah, one of the parodies of that, which you may have seen, was that they described a chase. And it was Harry and Meghan chasing the paparazzi, trying to get more pictures taken.
Yeah, with their arms waving in the air, you know, look at me. And you know, and they need to have, everyone needs to have some kind of a victim status where somehow somebody is is putting upon them something. Otherwise, you could be the most loathed person in America, the straight white man. You know, I mean, you know, you've got no, you know, you're going to be completely ignored. So you have to come up with something. Indeed. So you have to come up with an angle. You know, I mean, when you're applying for college now, you have to write an essay that shows somehow that you were victimized some way and that you overcame it. Something happened to you based on race, based on whatever. It's kind of across the board. That's what you do. That's your entry.
And, function though of these institutions getting too big. I mean, who would have thought it was a great idea to have the government control the schools?
Not to get again quote my dear friend the late Dr. Samuel Blumenfeld, but he wrote the book Is Public Education Necessary? He says it's not. He said that it was never something that the government should have gotten involved. And even way back in the 19th century, it was starting with the Prussian model and, you know, with the polytechnic model. I mean, basically forcing children to kind of conform and become human resources. That's a really interesting topic we could delve into deeply. But anyway.
Well, I don't know if Sam went in this direction with it, but I think what happens is once these organizations start, they tend to attract leftist people who get some sort of sexual arousal about controlling others. That seems to be their mission in life. And the old cliche, whatever isn't prohibited is mandatory, you know.
So, well, look, that's what the left is all about, controlling other people for their own good, allegedly for their own good. It's a an authoritarian
exist in the entire country.
Yeah, I mean, it's an authoritarian agenda. It wants to replace God with man. You know, Whitaker Chambers wrote about this in his book, Witness. You know, it's a worship of the power of man on earth, an elite group that has some kind of privilege to control others for their own good. I mean, it's the basic philosophy we're looking at here. So, but bringing things back to the Gay Pride Month, the main causes, it seems to me, at this point, is the neutering of children and the drag queens for children. And I mean, is this really what gay people support? I don't think they do, actually. I think it's their leadership that does. It's the same way that, like, the ADL claims to speak for Judaism when it really doesn't. But it's because they're leftists, because they're Marxists.
You're right, but the problem is you don't hear a lot of Jews, to use that example, denouncing the ADL.
By the way, sent me a note suggesting that I do an article about the ADL, and I'm working on it, and it's not easy because they are, yeah, you don't F with them.
But I'm gonna
get into it.
The idea with the whole gay rights movement started, and they didn't promote gay rights at first. They promoted heterosexual promiscuity at first, and then tried to create the sexual revolution, and then sort of shoehorn in the gay thing. So the advancement of the drag queen and the pedophilia is to push the needle all the way the other direction, so that the average good gay couple, quote unquote, will seem to be more mainstream. But the fact that they're going after kids.
I hope that gay people, I don't think most of them probably do support this. And some of them who think they do, they're either afraid to speak out, or because they've bought into this idea that somehow, they're persecuted, which they're not. No. And somehow they have to then have solidarity with this leadership, or there's a lot of complex reasons. It's the same phenomenon with Jews falling into leftism, or Black people falling into leftism. Yeah. The establishment is communistic, it's authoritarian, it's intersected with other likewise communistic groups and people. And it's a very difficult thing to wake up from that and oppose it. And when you do, you can get hurt, or you can be ignored or wiped off the white, just airbrushed out. So, I would ask people who are gay to wake up. Do they want to see children neutered? By the way, you have a teenager, they think they might be gay. Now they're being told, oh, you're really a woman in a man's body, or a man in a woman's body, and go in for surgery. Whatever happened with, a homosexual? I mean, fine. It's not, it's like now it's this new thing. Is that good for the gay world? I mean, is that what they want?
But here's where...
Not to mention, what about women? Where are the feminists? Right? Now men, putting on a skirt, are dominating in a lot of areas, and they're celebrated.
Well, right. I mean, this just...
And you can't say anything about it. It's the same set of circumstances. It's a communist agenda. It's the same tactic.
The bankruptcy of these movements. The reason feminists don't speak out... They don't really stand for anything other than disorder. And I'm not so sure. On the one hand, they're probably most gays don't support this radical agenda. But I don't know how many gays of goodwill are actually out there. And I'm not so sure.
They're not out there at all. Neither are women, except for a couple of brave women who are stepping forward, and they're getting crap thrown at them when they go to speak up. And they're attacked.
Proposing the Jackson and so on, which I agree with, but you haven't exactly had your door beaten in by fellow Jews that want to join you.
No, I'm not, and there's a wall of silence about that. That's fine. I think it's a combination of conditioning, fear, ignorance, lack of understanding of what actually Judaism is, the covenant of God and the children of Israel. It's a lot of lies have been pushed by this extremist subversive group that infiltrated Judaism in the 18th century.
Right.
I get into that in my book. And, it's something that it's very difficult to kind of turn the ship in the other direction. I generally am an optimist on these matters, but it's a Herculean job, as it were. So, Mike, what do you have coming up on your Substack?
All right. Yeah, I wasn't able to finish the article this week. There was, I have other things going besides the Substack, but I did get some good commentary on the last couple of articles that had to do with institutions, and I was going to try to put something together. Maybe are we coming back? Maybe is the optimistic thing here that normal people, the normies, as you call it, have they actually had enough? Are we fighting back? We're not doing Bud Light, targeted in trouble, Disney, et cetera, et cetera. Is that, you know, use the next couple of minutes, is that a positive start? The fact that Disney has laid off thousands of workers, every movie they come out with has lost money.
Eventually, it's going to catch up to them. Eventually, it's going to catch up to them, and I hope it does sooner than later. The other positive thing going on is, I think, Turning Point USA, Charlie Kirk's group, they have partnered with this group that is now financing the setting up in the key states of ballot harvesting, of uncovering voters and getting their ballots who are like low impact voters, bringing the ballot to them. You know, they're going to do all the stuff that the liberal Democrats did in 2020 to steal the election. You know, they point out that, I was just listening to one of the chief people involved in that with Jack Posobiec, and he was pointing out that Republicans vote for 12 hours on election day, whereas Democrats, they vote for 2 or 3 weeks. And that in order to, this is the way it's, the game is played now. This is reality. And we have to do this. And he's doing it. They're implementing it so that Republicans are going to find their voters. They're going to vote them and vote them and vote them for weeks. They're going to go to the nursing homes and help people fill out their ballots. They're going to do all the things that the Democrats did in 2020 with a grant from Zuckerberg for $420 million. And they don't have that kind of money, but they have people who are involved. Check out TPUSA, Turning Point USA. Check out Jack Posobiec's website, his show on human events. There are a couple of others who are really getting into this. And you can actually sign up and start to find these voters and recruit them, get them the ballots, follow them, get the thing voted, you know, learn the laws in your own state. There are a lot of things that could be done. Some of this was started in the midterm, but it needs to go further. Cleta Mitchell's another source. She's I think, a big time philanthropist who's involved here. And there are other people involved. This is how it's going to have to be done. It's not a one man one vote anymore. We're not going to win that way because the elections are rigged. We have to face that and do it and get involved in doing it, you know, nose to nose. We have to meet them on the field of battle.
How would you prevent a Jim Justice situation now where the DOJ decided to have an investigation?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look what Trump's going through. That's what they do. They use the power of the our justice system, not to run against somebody, but to put them in jail, to persecute them, to find, you know, to do that kind of deep, you know, this happened in Michigan in this last election. Those three witches who run that state, they didn't campaign against their opponents. They investigated them and had brought charges against them and put them in court. You know, this is how they're doing it now. They cannot win. You know, I would say to liberals, I would say to Democrats, you know, you have a stake in this too. We can't have a country that is run like this, where, you know, there's not a legitimate loyal opposition, where you have legitimate debate, and, you know, you let the best side win. And maybe, you know, sure, things could get a little heated, but, you know, it still falls within an Overton window, where you're not like using the system to enforce your will. Anyway, Mike, I guess I'll talk to you next week.
All right.
And keep up the good work.
And in the meantime, try to get Jonathan Greenblatt on your show.
Forget it. Okay. I've actually contacted them and they've said no. So just so you know.
Oh, they really?
They looked into me and they said, we're not interested.
Yeah.
That's their right. But, you know, I'm working on that issue. And right. that's gonna be a nasty one. Anyway, thanks a lot.
I'll try. All right, we will see you next time.
Okay. Bye-bye.